بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. ثم أما بعد, to proceed. Last time we talked about the wali and the wali being a condition of validity in the contract of marriage, and that is the guardian. And we said that and pay attention to me, not the slides. No, because we're not there yet. We're not there yet. But we said that we will do patchwork. What was the patchwork that we talked about last time? We said that, you know, in the Hanafi school, the woman can marry herself without the wali, but then the permanent validity of the marriage depends on the later approval of the wali. So she went ahead and she married herself to someone. The wali came back and said, well, this one is not compatible. The wali then will have the right to annul that marriage. And we said that the majority of the scholars said that she cannot marry herself without the presence of her guardian, which is not to vest it on someone else, to give it to someone else, the power of marrying herself. Therefore, she can't pick someone from the street and have him marry her. It has to go through this certain order that we talked about last time, starting with the father, the son, and, you know, the brother, the uncle, and so on and so forth. And we said the father means the father and the grandfather, etc. So the ancestors and the descendants, and then the sides, which are the brothers. And we said the majority make it consider a condition of validity, the presence of the guardian, to be a condition of validity. And we said that the majority would allow the father, and the Shafi'is would also allow the grandfather, to marry her against her wish if she was little, as-saghira, the young one. And we will talk about this, and we will talk about what they probably meant. And we said that what seems from the proofs from the Quran and Sunnah is that you do need the approval of the two parties. So you do need the approval of the woman, as Abu Hanifa, may Allah have mercy, or the Hanafis, may Allah have mercy on them, and preserve, you know, the alive of the woman, the bride, and you do need the approval of the guardian, as the majority said. So that is the correct position, and that is the patchwork, is that one approval is not enough. The approval of the wali is not enough, and the approval of the woman is not enough. You combine the two approvals. And we said that we have proof over on this. We have many proofs, right? One of the proofs is that the Prophet ﷺ clearly said, "Well, bikru yasta'dhinuha abuha," and non-previously married or previously unmarried, her father will seek her permission. Will seek her permission. And then the Prophet said, "Well, bikru idhnuha sumatuha," and for the previously unmarried, her permission is her silence. But what if she is screaming and yelling and kicking and fussing and saying, no, 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 no? Have you taken her permission? No. Therefore, what would we do with the hadith? What does the hadith mean? Then if we say that we do not need her permission or her approval, what would we do with the hadith? What would the Prophet mean by saying, well, bikru yasta'dhinuha abuha? Yasta'dhin means what? Asks for permission. Well, she did not permit. You know, if she stays silent out of shyness, and the scholars did say that, because there are two different types of shyness or silence. There is silence out of apprehension and silence out of shyness. If she stays silent out of shyness, that is permission. But if she stays silent out of apprehension, and then she goes into one of those rooms and tells her mother, you know what, I hate that man very much, I can't marry him, I was afraid to say that to my father. That is not silence, that is not permission. That is, you know, being afraid. Therefore, that doesn't count as a permission. Okay, so we said that we do need both. And the other proof that we do need both, many proofs that we do need the guardian, لا نكاح إلا بولي, there is no valid marriage except with a guardian. The Prophet said that, لا تنكح المرأة المرأة لا تنكح المرأة نفسها, a woman does not marry herself or another woman off. Because you do need her wali, and we said why, and we said that he will be looking after her best interest, and he will have more knowledge about the world of men, and he will be able to investigate the conduct and behavior of the person and monitor and ask around and so on and so forth. And men know about men more than women know about men, and the men have their own circles and their own ways. He will be able to find friends who can check and ask on that person. And then a father who takes care of that girl for 18 years and considers her a piece of his heart, like the Prophet ﷺ said about Fatima, Fatima tubada'atun minni, certainly Fatima is a piece of me. Then that father must have a say in the marriage of his daughter, and she must have a say too. We have to have both agree. And if they don't agree, the Prophet said, فَإِنْ اِسْتَجَرُوا فَالسُّلْطَانُ وَلِيُّ مَنْ لَا وَلِيَّ لَهُ, as in the hadith of Aisha رضي الله عنها. If they dispute, then the ruler will be the guardian of one who does not have a guardian, which tells you that we do need the approval of both, doesn't it? Because it tells you that he cannot override her and she cannot override him. The Prophet is saying clearly, if they dispute, then the ruler. Meaning what? It has to be, that dispute will have to be taken somewhere else. A wise person, which is the judge, the ruler is not going to do everything. There are people who act on behalf of the ruler. That's a judge, which is a scholar, a knowledgeable person, and a person who also has experience and, particularly about family matters and so on and so forth, we'll sit them down and we'll see why are they disagreeing. Maybe she makes sense and her father doesn't. Maybe her father makes sense and she doesn't. The judge will be able to tell. But the judge will lean towards what? No marriage. He will lean towards, like, if she wants to marry and her father doesn't, and her father provides any justifiable reasons, then the judge will not sever the parental rights in this case, because the father did supply some justifiable reason. Now, what about if her father wants to force her to marry and she does not provide a justifiable reason? The judge will not force her to marry, even if she does not provide a justifiable reason, because it is ultimately her that is going to be living with this man. And maybe she has a reason that is not that cannot be expressed easily, because this has to do with emotions. From the father's perspective, he has to provide a justifiable reason, because it's not about emotions. You're not the one who's going to marry that person. But if you provide a justifiable reason, this person, I've looked at his CV and he did not keep one job for a couple of months for the last 10 years. Well, he is a father. Well, he is looking for the best interest of his daughter, and he thinks that this is a problem. And this indicates to him that his daughter may be suffering in the future for some reason. Or I ask about him or this or that. But the father does not have the right to say, I don't like how his nose looks or his ears, or, that is not the justifiable reason. You're not going to marry him. You have to think, more about things that are more logical than this. But she can refuse someone because she doesn't like him. Not only that she can refuse someone because she doesn't like how he looks, Fatima came to the Prophet ﷺ and said to him, إِنِّي مْرَأَةٌ أَكْرَهُ الْكُفْرَ بَعْدَ الْإِسْلَامِ وَإِنِّي لَأَعِبُ عَلَى ثَابِتٍ فِي خُلُقٍ وَلَا دِينٍ. I am a woman who hates rejection. Kufr here means rejection, ungratefulness, ma'asiyah, disobedience, after I have become Muslim. And I do not condemn any of Thabit Thabit, this particular Thabit is Thabit ibn Qais, and one of the greatest Sahaba. And I do not condemn any of his behavior or religious commitment. He's a very religious person, a very polite and candid, and behavior excellent, you know, conduct excellent, religion excellent, but I hate him. So the Prophet ﷺ told her, أَتَرُدِّينَ عَلَيْهِ حَدِيقَتَهُ, shall you give him his farm back or garden back? She said, yes. He said, take your garden and divorce her. And this is a command. So even after marriage, she doesn't like him. But she truly has to not like him. You know, because there is a weak hadith, but the scholars agree on its meaning. المختلعات هن المنافقات. The ones who ask for separation are the true hypocrites. That is when the woman goes to the judge and says, you know, I hate him, when she doesn't actually hate him. She got angry with him over something, and then she went to the judge and said, I hate him, to get when she does not actually hate him. But if she hates him, then she does not need to provide justifiable reasons, because hey, the hate and love are not usually rational. Or sometimes they are, but not necessarily always rational. Therefore, before marriage, she does have the same right to say, no, I don't want him. But that position that we have chosen to be the more correct position is where you need the approval of both. If one is contesting, this will not go through unless the father is contesting to the marriage and he is unable to provide justifiable reasons. In this case, it will go through. The judge will override the father and sever the parental rights in this case, because the father must provide justifiable reasons. She does not have to. Now, if you do not take that position, that you need the approval of both, then you will have to talk about compatibility here. So the scholars who did not take that position, that you do need the approval of both, will have to talk about compatibility. Why? Because these scholars are saying that the father will go ahead and marry her against her wish if she is previously unmarried. She's bikr, previously non-married. The father will go ahead and marry her against her wish. You know, those scholars, you have to understand their position. Don't always jump and be hasty in reaching conclusions. Why do those scholars say that? Because oftentimes the girls, the sisters, they do have a dream about a particular figure that is not present. You know, I know members of my family. I know a member of my family who refused 31 suitors. And then the 32nd, you know, she's married to the 32nd, and she's having difficulties with that 32nd, because the 31 that came prior to him, many of them were much better. But then she refused, and her father was, you know, it's up to you. Yep. But then the scholars were saying that in this case, the father will need to act a little bit assertive, because that woman who keeps on refusing suitors, her chances will get worse. And she gets older and her chances get worse. And also, when people learn about her attitude, that she refused, you know, can you imagine going to, you know, propose to someone who refused 26 suitors before you? You will be, you'll be anxious and, you know, sweating, and it's such an ordeal. So the chances get worse and worse. And people who have dignity will not really be. So sometimes the girls have certain dreams about, you know, how the husband should look like, you know. And in this case, they can hurt themselves. And in this case, the scholars are saying that the father would go ahead and marry her against her wish because, keep in mind, it is the father. It is not the uncle. They did not say that about the uncle. They said the uncle cannot marry her. If the father is dead, the uncle will not be able to marry her against her wish. Right? They said only the... But why? Because the father, they said that he has enough emotions to prevent him, except in very rare cases. And very rare cases are usually not the standard, not the measuring stick, not what we base rulings on. But the father will have enough compassion in his heart to not compromise, to not compromise. But we will eventually say that this opinion is not the correct one, that you actually do need the approval of both, and you cannot. You can force her in the sense of what? In the sense of, give her like a little exhortation, like to be assertive. You know what? You've refused six people before, and they were decent people. You're going to have to choose someone. You're going to have to get married. Otherwise, your chances will get less. And if the father acts in this way, he doesn't force her to marry a particular one, but he will have to tell her that there's got to be an end for this. Then he's acting within his rights, within his reasonable rights. Okay, but this is it. But he's going to be assertive, but he's not going to be, taking her by force to that man while she's screaming and yelling and kicking, as we said before. Okay, so now that the scholars have said that the father may marry her against her wish, they need to say what is compatible and what's not compatible, because that woman can go to the judge and say, you know what, my father married me to this man, and he is really, very bad. he's not suitable at all, and then in this case, shall this judge annul or not? The Hanafis, on the other hand, they said that the woman can go ahead and marry without her guardian. Well, her guardian went to the judge and said that this man deceived, this crooked man deceived my daughter and married her, and he is just nothing that, that is near compatible or suitable for her. Then the judge will have to say, is he compatible or not? Then in this case, we have to say who's compatible and who's not compatible. Okay. According to the majority, there are various factors considered regarding the compatibility. The time to consider this is before the marriage contract is finalized. And that is the correct position. That is the position of the majority. So after the marriage, she cannot go back and say if she is, if she's okay with the marriage, the guardian is okay with the marriage. She cannot go back after the marriage and say, you know what, you used to be an engineer. You got laid off. Now you work this or that, and it doesn't suit me anymore. No, that is at the time of marriage. Not after marriage, because after marriage, when the husband, he was wealthy, became poor, he was this, or it doesn't work this way after marriage. She'll have to stay in the relationship with him. Now, if she started to really hate him and hate that arrangement, and she can't take it anymore because he became really dirt poor and she's not used to this, now she'll have to be honest with herself. Do I truly hate this relationship? I cannot perform like a righteous wife. And if she says to herself, I will not be able to perform like a righteous wife. I hate this relationship. I hate this arrangement. I can't go through it. Then she does have the right, in this case, to ask for khula, which is, to give him back his dowry. It is a different thing from annulment, where she keeps her financial rights. So it is a different type of separation. Ultimately, it is separation, but it is a different type of separation, and the man shall not be, wrong done in this type of separation, because it's not his fault that he became poor. She can't take it anymore. That's up to her, but it is not my fault that I got laid off or I became poor. So this has to do before marriage. So the sisters who are married now and their husbands had some trouble or difficulty, that doesn't work, this compatibility. According to the majority, it is the man that must be compatible for the woman and not vice versa. In other words, all of this is to protect the woman. And many times the women don't feel this. They feel like there are lots of restrictions here and so on. But all of this is actually to protect the woman. So the man who is, you know, the king can decide to marry, or the prince can decide to marry anyone he wants to marry. Anyone, you know. If she doesn't treat her right, that is, he wants her, that is fine. It is, when we're talking about compatibility, according to the vast majority of the scholars, we are making sure that the man will be compatible for the woman. Why? Because, like it or not, she is the weaker party in this relationship. And if the man is not compatible, she is the one who will suffer. But if she is beneath him and he's okay with it, she's not going to abuse him. I do say this, you know, for people who attend my classes know that I repeat, and repetition is not bad. The Prophet used to repeat. One of the scholars said that, you know, you should repeat and repeat and repeat, because the people who are sitting in front of you are not getting everything you say. And they, you know, one scholar once said, you know, there is some clause that he, you know, repeats very frequently, statement that he repeats on Jummah very frequently. And one of the people who sat in the first row one time came and said to him, you know, what you said today was, you know, and he quoted that statement. That affected me so much. He said, you know, I've been saying this for the past few years. Well, this is the first time this man got it. So it's, but anyway, so I repeat this. What I wanted to say is, you don't find a lot of men coming to the emergency room crying at 2 o'clock in the morning because their wives beat them. That's, you know, doesn't happen this often, right? In fact, in my career, I didn't see it. So if someone did, it's a, you know, please let me know. But you do find that, you do find the opposite, a wife coming to the emergency room because her husband beat her at 1 o'clock in the morning. Therefore, she continues to be the weaker party. Therefore, when we're talking about compatibility, we want to make sure that she will marry someone who will not abuse her. But for the man, that doesn't apply. The scholars who allow the father to marry his daughter against her wish will need to define the compatibility carefully. That is why Imam Shafi'i Imam Shafi'i considers it a condition of validity only if the marriage was against the woman's wish. Only, you know, compatibility would be a condition of validity here, according to Imam Shafi'i, only if it was against the woman's wish. Because it is her right. This is for her best interest. So if she gives up her right, it is her problem. It is her fault. You know, if she insists on marrying this particular man, her guardian accepts the particular man, and the man is quite non-compatible, then it's her fault. You know, you like him. So we would be talking about this if the marriage was done against the woman's wish. If the adult woman and her sole guardian means what here? It means like a father. A father is a sole guardian because there is no one equal to him in his layer. But if it is a brother, because the father died, he's not the sole guardian, because there are partners, there are other brothers who have as much right, entitlement, as he does to that decision. Okay, so the sole guardian agree on a certain groom that is non-compatible, except for the deen. The marriage will be valid according to the vast majority. You know, except for the deen, I mean here, you know, they're not going to agree on marrying her to a non-Muslim, to a zindiq, someone who's, you know, in and out of Islam or something of that nature. But they can agree on marrying her to someone who's really not very good Muslim. That is a different issue. That is part of the compatibility But if they both agree, if they both agree, the father and the woman agree on marrying this person who is not a very good Muslim, but Muslim. You know, he's not in and out. He's not, you know, Zindiq, he's Muslim. Then the marriage will go through. Ahmed, or in the Hanbali madhab, Ahmed may Allah have mercy on him, or in the Hanbali madhab, they said all must agree. So the whole family has to agree if the man will be an incompatible. If the guardian is the sultan or the ruler and he agreed with a woman on a non-compatible groom, then it is controversial whether the marriage is valid or not, since he is an agent for the Muslims. He is not, he doesn't have parental rights. He is an agent. You know, so when the, when like a Muslim convert, for instance, a sister converted to Islam, she wants to marry someone from the community. And then this imam marries her to someone who's non-compatible. This imam now is acting on behalf of the ruler, because there is no ruler here. But this is the closest he can get to a ruler or a judge. So this imam has the responsibility of marrying her to someone who is compatible. Now, if he goes ahead and marries her to someone who's non-compatible, then is this marriage valid? There is a difference of opinion here. All of this, you know, we have her agreement, right? We are having all of this, we are having her agreement. She agrees. She wants the non-compatible man. But maybe she doesn't know much about the man. Maybe she, you know, she didn't, you know, like the sisters, they sit in their own world and the men sit in their own world. How much can she know about the man? Then it is the responsibility of this imam, yansah laha, to advise her with sincerity. Nasiha is sincerity and devotion. She is his sister. And now she is not only his sister, she is his guardianee. He is the guardian. He's responsible like a dad now, father, figure. So if he goes ahead and marries her to someone who's non-compatible, then it is the marriage, it is controversial whether the marriage is non-valid or not. It's not controversial that he erred and sinned, but it is controversial whether the marriage is valid or not. And the people who say it is valid, they say, well, she agrees and he agrees, and he is the ruler, so he acts on behalf of the guardians that are absent. The other scholars say, no, he doesn't act on behalf of the guardians that are absent. Those guardians that are absent, each one of them had an entitlement to this guardianship by the fact of being a father, of being a grandfather, of being a son, of being a brother. This ruler had an entitlement to this guardianship because he is an agent for the Muslims, represents the Muslims. Therefore, it is not original entitlement. Therefore, his approval does not matter here. Okay. Now let's talk about the factors, the main factors. Now, the bottom line is that each and every Muslim is suitable for each and every Muslim. Each and every Muslim male is suitable for each and every Muslim female, and vice versa. But those factors of compatibility that we will be talking about, the Prophet said that clearly, and we will go over the hadith and the ayat that say this. But the Prophet said, "Al-Muslimuna takafa'u dima'uhum, yas'a bidhimmatihim adnahum wa yujiru alayhim aqsahum, wa hum yadun ala man siwahum." All Muslims are equal. Their blood is equal. The least amongst them will enjoy their protection. Yes, he walks around the earth enjoying their protection. You see, whenever you go, like an American citizen or a Canadian citizen goes to one of the third world countries and he flashes the passport, he thinks that, you know, I have to get some, you know, respect here. And then the British, you know, the queen signs the passport and and so on in Britain. So that is what it is. يَسْعَى بِذِمَّتِهِمْ He uses their clout and authority in the land to walk around. That's the least amongst them. وَيُجِيرُ عَلَيْهِمْ أَقْصَاهُمْ And the farthest of them, the farthest of them, like someone who lives in a remote island, but he's Muslim, will give protection rights to non-Muslims in the Muslim land. That is yujir, refugee rights. He will give refuge. So the issue of refugees and, you know, giving refuge to people and so on and so forth, this is not the UN charter. This is, you know, it is not a country. Keep in mind that the Prophet ﷺ said that the farthest Muslim out there, like this Muslim, people don't do that nowadays. We have to be honest. The Muslim countries are not doing any of that. But we're talking about the ideal, the Prophet ﷺ, and the Prophet implemented this. أَجَرْنَا مَنْ أَجَرْتِيَا أُمَّهَانِ We shall give refuge to whomever you give refuge to, O أُمْهَانِ, mother of Hannah, which, you know, a woman. And she is able to give refuge and rights of protection in the Muslim land. So the equality and everybody is good for everybody. Keep in mind, when everybody is pleased, we're not talking about compatibility. The guardians or the guardians are okay, and the potential wife is okay. Then we're not talking about compatibility. No judge will come and say, no, this is wrong. The vast majority of the scholars want the approval of the guardians and the woman. But then if the guardian and the woman clash and they go to the judge and she goes to the judge and says, you know, my father married me to this man who is completely incompatible, then the judge will have to say, is he or is he not? And then they have to talk about these issues. So now according to the Hanafis, Maliki, Shafi'is, and Hanbalis, religion, and that is not religion being Muslim, because she has to marry someone who is Muslim. A Muslim woman cannot marry someone who is non-Muslim. That is religion, when they say deen here, meaning religious commitment. Religious commitment. And the Imam Malik, and that is the right position that we will say afterwards, said that, you know, there are two reports from Imam Malik. One said only a religious commitment, and the other one said three. Religious commitment to freedom and physical wellness. Religious commitment, freedom and physical wellness. If she is free and her father marries her to someone who is a slave, which is okay, that is not haram. She could be free and her father marries her to someone who is a slave. In this case, Imam Malik would say that this is not compatible, because she does get harmed by his condition, because he will not be around for her all the time, you know, and so on. So that is a compromise of compatibility according to Imam Malik, the religious commitment and the physical wellness. Physical wellness according to Imam Malik, and according to the majority of them, when they talk about physical wellness, they talk about diseases that will cause the wife to be, you know, repelled, repulsive diseases. They're not talking about diabetes. They're talking about, you know, leprosy. They're talking about insanity. They used to consider vitiligo a big deal. You know, vitiligo is not such a big deal, but they used to consider vitiligo a big deal because it used to be, sometimes it is quite disfiguring, particularly in people who have darker complexion. Vitiligo could be quite disfiguring. You know, and it could be, you know, it is when you have like lighter color skin in patches of lighter color skin. البرص والجذام والجنون برص والجذام والجنون العنة شيء آخر يعني إذا كان عنين يعني لا يقدر على الوط is not considered because who would know before, you know, but برص والجذام والجنون برص which is vitiligo, جذام leprosy, and جنون which is insanity. These are three things that You know, if she goes to the judge and says to the judge, my father married me to someone who has this, you know, vitiligo. And I don't like it. So the judge will say that is not compatible. Now, if she has it, then the judge will say, no, you know, look in the mirror. You have it. So your father married you to someone who has the same condition. He's looking for your best interest because no one else will. And likewise nowadays, if her father marries her to someone who has HIV, non-compatible. You know, this will harm me. It is not a disease that is, you know, between you and yourself. This is a disease that will harm me. Okay, so religious commitment is the first one that we talked about here. But the Muslim woman will not marry a non-Muslim man by consensus. Muhammad ibn al-Hasan and ibn Hazm, they do not consider their religious commitment unless he is addicted to wine and evil and so on and so forth. So when they do not consider this to be by consensus, it is halal to marry her to someone who is asi, who is a sinner, halal. But is he compatible? Can she go to the judge and say, my father married me to someone who smokes tobacco? Okay, now, will the judge say that this is a compromise of religious commitment that would warrant annulment? Many of the judges would not do that, you know, despite the fact that tobacco is a sin. But if she goes to the judge and says, my father married me to someone who is a fornicator and he is addicted to wine and this and that, then most of the judges would say, annulled. Your father can't marry you to someone like this. So religious commitment. We're talking about legalities here. There is a difference between legalities and the ideal picture. What is the ideal picture? The hadith of Abdullah bin Mas'ud. تُنْكَحُ الْمَرْأَ لِأَرْبَعْ لِمَالِهَا وَجَمَالِهَا وَحَسَبِهَا وَدِينِهَا فَاظْفَرْ بِذَاتِ دِينِ تَرِبَتْ يَذَاكَ. A woman will be married for four reasons. Her wealth, her beauty, her lineage, meaning her status, and her deen. So marry the religious one, may you prosper. Or may you be a loser if you don't, lest you be a loser. Because taribat is tasaqat bit-turab, when your hands touch the soil. That means that you're poor, like dirt poor, and your hands are on the soil. So if you don't marry the religious woman, then you'll be destroyed. You'll destroy yourself. That's what the Prophet ﷺ says. So that is the advice. That's the advice of the Prophet ﷺ. And if you marry her because of her money can spoil her. If you marry her because of her beauty can make her a tyrant. لا تتزوجهن لحسنهن عسى حسنهن أن يضغيهن ولا تتزوجهن لمالهن عسى مالهن أن يرضيهن. So don't marry them for their beauty. Their beauty can make them tyrants. Don't marry them for their money. Their money can spoil them. Their wealth can spoil them. She can be used. Even though you married her and, you know, she helped you initially, eventually you're going to be stuck with her. So, you know, she did help you. And she is used to this standard of living. So you're going to have to appease her, or appease that standard of living, or maintain it for her. So that is the ideal thing. And when Al-Hasan al-Basri, may Allah have mercy on him, was approached by a man who said, you know, people propose to my daughter, whom should I marry her to? Several people. He said, زَوِّجْهَا التَّقِي فَإِنَّهُ إِنْ أَمْسَكَهَا أَكْرَمَهَا وَإِنْ طَلَّقَهَا لَمْ يَظْلِمْهَا. Give her to the pious one. Because you have two possibilities. Things will go right between them or wrong. The pious one, if he kept her, he will honor her. And if he divorced her, he will not transgress her. It will be good separation. So good marriage and good separation. Because the non-pious one, be a good marriage. Because as long as he likes her, as long as he's attracted to her and he likes her, he'll be nice. But once they disagree and he starts to not like her, or she gets sick and she loses her beauty, or she gets older and loses her beauty, or she gains weight, or she does this or that, and he's not physically that much attracted to her, then that non-pious one, you know, he will transgress her. He will oppress her. Even though he used to buy her gifts every week and this and that, and he used to be very nice. He was very nice because he was attracted to her, not because he has this innate justice and fairness inside him. That is only the pious one who will do this. Okay, so we've talked about religious commitment. This is extremely important. The issue of freedom. The issue of freedom here, a man will not be able to marry a woman that is a slave except if he does not, if he can't marry a woman who's not. Why? So that he does not subject his offspring to slavery. He does not subject his offspring to slavery. A woman may marry a man who is a slave if she is free, because when Barira was released, was set free, Aisha set her free, the Prophet ﷺ said to Barira, if you want, you can stay with your husband, who was a slave, and if you want, you can separate. And Barira insisted to separate. And the Prophet was mediating for her husband, because her husband was really attached to her. So the Prophet was mediating for her husband, and he was like sort of begging Barira, sort of, you know, making a plea to Barira to stay with her husband. Therefore, it wouldn't be haram if the Prophet was that was the medium between them. But then she insisted on leaving him. So the Prophet let her leave him. But freedom is a is one of the issues of compatibility. You know, whenever we talk about slavery in Islam, and I know that the issue of slavery is a sensitive issue and will continue to be a sensitive issue. Slavery in Islam is not a racial practice. That is one of the bigger differences. There are multiple differences, but we're not going to go back and talk about the differences. You know, and how you treat the slave like you treat yourself, and you feed him from your food, and you give him, you clothe him from your clothes, and you treat him like a brother. That's a command from the Prophet ﷺ. The history testified to this in practice. But the first thing that we have to be aware of is that slavery in Islam is Suhaib al-Rumi, is Salman al-Farisi, is Zayd ibn Haritha al-Arabi, you know, Suhaib the Roman, Salman the Persian, Zayd ibn Haritha the Arab. These are all slaves. Bilal the Abyssinian. These are all slaves. It is not a racial practice, but rather a practice of society. And in Islam, the only tributary of slavery was after Islam. Before Islam, there were many tributaries. After Islam, the only tributary was captives of war, could be enslaved. And that eventually helped them not only make it to freedom, but make it to celebrity, and make it to glory. You know, the greatest figures that we talk about, you know, Atta and Mujahid and Ikrimah, the Atta and Mujahid and Sa'id ibn Jubayr and Hassan al-Basri, that is the system that made those make it to glory. Because once they have, this was to preserve their lives. We said this many times before. People could not feed like if you defeat an army that has like 5,000 people, the garrison of Acre, for instance. If you defeat an army that has many, many people, enslaving them was their way out of death. Out of death. You know, when Richard the Lionhearted defeated the garrison of the Acre, he killed all of the garrison of Acre, 3,000 men, in front of Salah ad-Din's eyes, because he was, you know, able to see them from a distance. And Napoleon did the same thing when he conquered Acre. the slavery was a way to protect them, because you can't release them, they will regroup and come back and fight you. And you can't keep them in jail because you don't have enough food for yourself to be feeding 3,000 people. So they usually finish them. And that slavery was a means for them to survival. And they were able to excel until the time of the Tabi'in was called the Asr al-Mawali, the era of the freed slaves, because they became the masters of different sciences and so on and so forth. And certainly they were released, because the many injunctions or the many recommendations and injunctions about releasing them and so on and so forth. Nafa, the golden chain of al-Bukhari is Malik an Nafa an Ibn Umar, right? Malik from Nafa from Ibn Umar. That's called the golden chain. That is the greatest chain of narration of a hadith. It's called the golden chain, because each one of them was a great imam, Malik and Nafa and Abdullah ibn Umar. Nafa is a freed slave of Abdullah ibn Umar. Next would be the lineage. So the father would not be able to marry his daughter against her wish to a slave. Now, if the father and the daughter agreed, then that's fine. Lineage. That issue of lineage is another issue that is somewhat sensitive, because in some of the fiqh books, they talk about, the Hashemis being compatible to the Hashemis, and the Qurayshis being compatible with then Quraysh, and then it goes out like this. Because they take it from the Prophet ﷺ being the best of Allah's creation, and then it goes out in circles like this. But you will find in the Sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ the opposite of this, and we will talk about it. But this is how the scholars looked at it. The center, the best of creation, is the Prophet ﷺ, and they take it like out in circles like this. The closer you are to him, then you are compatible. The Hashemi is compatible with the Hashemi. So Umar ibn al-Khattab is not Hashemi, he's Adawi. And Uthman ibn Affan is not Hashemi, he's Umawi. But they would not be compatible with the Hashemis, which certainly, it is difficult because, the Prophet married two of his daughters to Uthman ibn Affan and so on. So that lineage, we will talk about it now. But now the lineage that may be looked at is, if the father comes and says, well, this family does not really suit us. Socioeconomic standard is quite different from ours. Is the judge going to say to the father, you're not making sense? If the difference is great, he will not say to the father, you're not making sense. And then the father will have the right at this point to veto the marriage. We said we need the approval of the two. They both need to approve it. He will not be able to force her to marry someone that she doesn't want. She will also have to get his approval, because if she goes out and marries someone that is quite different from her, from her upbringing, And these things are true, and all of us should be very impartial, very impartial. We should look at the law not from our own narrow perspectives and narrow interests, but truly, if a daughter of a prince got married to someone who is, very different, then didn't we talk about this last time? She, the sister that I talked to her several times to prevent her, and then she got, just after the sweetness of the first few days was over, and she walks to the fridge and she doesn't find the orange juice and doesn't find cereal in the kitchen and stuff. Well, didn't you know that? No, she did not. even if she knew it, she did not factor it in right. But now she's able to factor it in, because now that, you know, dream of hers is not a dream anymore. He's a reality. He is a person that has, you know, that she's able to discover his shortcomings now. He goes to the bathroom. He, you know, his mouth sometimes smells, and, you know, his breath is not. He's not a dream anymore. He is like flesh, and he does have his shortcomings, and he does have his defects, and so on and so forth. And he looks very good once he takes off his shirt. He has those wrinkles, and, you know, he's fat. And that's true, because from outside, it's a completely different story. So now that person is not a dream anymore. Now she goes back and, you know, thinks about the cereal that she used to eat in the morning. Well, in Egypt, you know, cereal here, people don't get that joke here, because cereal here, everybody eats cereals. But in Egypt, cereal is, you know, certain people, class, socioeconomic class, eat cereal. And, you know, poor people cannot afford to eat cereal. So then things started to crumble, because there's no cereal here. And then but the father needs to say, I think that you will face difficulties. Then the issue of profession here, and they have they have professions, they have their own ways, and it is all, it tells you what? It tells you that the jurists were trying to say, we're trying to look after the interest of the person, because it's not written in the Quran or Sunnah. It's not written in the Quran and Sunnah. It is not written in the Quran and Sunnah that the surgeon is less than the physician. But then, the surgeon was much less than the physician. Al-jara'ihi, you know, nowadays you wish to be a surgeon, make a lot more money. But but al-jara'ihi, they used to call him al-jara'ihi, used to be a lower job. The physician was one of the highest, and that's the person who gives medicine. But the one who, you know, takes care of wounds, because after it is culture dependent, because after all, what did this man do? There was no anesthesia. He's not going to, you know, do open heart surgery. He took care of wounds and he fixed some bones and did some, that's it. But the physician is the one who is the brains, you know, gives this particular medicine for this particular disease and so on and so forth. So the issue of profession, it is culturally dependent. Therefore, you read the fiqh books, you don't come and say, you know, this isn't this and this is compatible with this. You'll be crazy, because if you come and say, well, he is a surgeon, not compatible, you know, this gets crazy. Now, so it is a matter of, you know, is she going to have a difficulty living with him and not? The issue of wealth also. The Hanafis you guys know the key, right, of abbreviation here. The Hanafis and Hanbalis, A for Ahmad, Hanbalis. Hanafis and Hanbalis consider wealth to be one of the factors that are important, because that is, after all, the Prophet ﷺ said, Al-hasabu al-mal, ahsabu al-nas allati yadhabuna ilayha al-mal. The status that people talk about is all about money. But he said the woman will be married for four things, her money and her status. So he distinguished between them. But he said that it is, al-hasab is the money, is the wealth. Why is this? Because they are different, but eventually the wealth will give you the status. Because you do see this more in countries that are poor and so on. But if you make money, your kids will have a better chance at, you know, going to a better school, a better university, et cetera, et cetera. So eventually, it is the money that will make the change. But you, as, you know, the money maker, the first money maker, there may be like a divide here between the status, your socioeconomic status, the way you talk, the way you act, the way you do the things, and your wealth. But eventually, the wealth will bring about the higher socioeconomic status. The physical wellness, and as we said, these are the things that leprosy, vitiligo, insanity, it is the woman's right and it is not the guardian's right. So the guardian cannot go to the woman and say to her, you got married to that leper and he is not compatible. You know, I would be very, you know, if my daughter decided to marry someone who has HIV, I would be, you know, mad, but they say that it is still her issue, because that does not bring about shame to him versus marrying someone who is, that will bring about harm to her. And he can advise her and assertively tell her, go there, but then it will not bring on shame to him to marry someone who is not particularly HIV, but, you know, hepatitis B, for instance. Hepatitis B. If you want to marry, you have to tell, by the way. If you have hepatitis B, you tell, I have hepatitis B. If she's okay, she's okay. And vice versa. If you don't tell, then that's a sin. And the marriage can be annulled because that harms her, you know. As for the correct opinion, the compatibility, except in terms of religious commitment, is neither a condition in the validity of marriage, nor is it a condition for its luzum, which is permanent validation of the marriage. So it is not a condition. It is not a condition, except for the part about religious commitment. This is the position of Umar, radiallahu anhu, Ibn Mas'ud, Muhammad ibn Sirin, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, Malik, Ibn Hazm, Sufyan al-Thawri, but there are mixed reports from Sufyan, Al-Hasan al-Basri, Al-Karfi. This is also one of the two narrations in the Hanbali Madhab that was chosen by Ibn Taymiyyah and Ibn al-Qayyim. So this is the position of a very large group of scholars, that compatibility is not a condition. They're not saying that the father will not look after the best interest of her daughter and tell her, you know what, this man is not going to be able to afford you the same standard of living or even close to it. They're not saying this, but they're saying legally it's not a condition. So if he marries her, but Imam Taymiyyah ibn al-Qayyim, they say that he cannot force her. He cannot marry her against her wish. But if, for instance, she goes out and she marries someone that is not compatible, he is religious, but he's not compatible, in the Hanafi school, Karhi is Hanafi, he would say that the father does not have the right now to annul it, like the rest of the Hanafis would say. If he's not compatible, the father can annul it. He would say he is compatible because he's a good practicing Muslim. And that's it. End of the subject. Now, if you read the, we have to have great respect for our scholars, that they meant well, they excelled, they did their best in arriving at the correct positions, and we have to understand the reasoning, even if we do not adopt their position, their reasoning. They were not classes. These scholars, many of them, were poor people, you know. So they were not classed, but they said that this is what would work out. This is how we can protect those women from abuse. Because that woman, if she's taken to a family where it is completely foreign to her, the culture is foreign, you know, people talk different, you know, and she will not find her cereal, then she will be, you know, she will be coming back to her dad soon. So they wanted to do well by the women. It is not that they wanted to defy the Quran and the Sunnah. But this is what the Quran and Sunnah say. You know, O mankind, we have created you from a male. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ إِنَّا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ مِنْ ذَكَرٍ وَأُنْثَى جَعَلْنَاكُمْ شُعُوبًا وَقَبَائِلَ لِتَعَارَفُوا إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. O mankind, we've created you from a male and a female, or a single male and a single female, and made you into nations and tribes, and most certainly, or verily, the most honorable of you with Allah is that believer who has a taqwa, is the most pious. Allah said, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ إِخْوَةً. The believers are nothing else but brothers. All the believers are brothers, equal brothers, you know, siblings. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also said, no, this is not, this is a typo here. It's not Rasulullah, it's Allah. قال الله. والمؤمنون والمؤمنات بعضهم أولياء بعض. The believers, men and women, are the awliya of each other. The believing men and women are the awliya of each other. Awliya, custodian, guardians, supporters, helpers, friends, protectors, confidants of one another. The Prophet ﷺ said, there is no superiority of an Arab over an non-Arab, or of an non-Arab over an Arab, or of a white man over a black man, or of a black man over a white man, except in terms of taqwa, piety. People are from Adam, and Adam is from dust. And that is the statement of the Prophet ﷺ. And then you go to the hadith of at-Tirmidhi. إِذَا جَاءَكُمْ مَنْ تَرْضَوْنَ دِينَهُ وَخُلَقَهُ فَزَوُّجُوهُ إِلَّا تَفْعَلُوا تَكُنْ فِتْنَةٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَفَسَادٌ عَرِيضٌ أو كبير أو كما قال. Okay, it's which means if there comes to you one with whose religious commitment and character you are pleased, then marry your female relatives under your care to him. For if you do not do that, there will be tribulation in the land and great mischief, corruption in the land. So, dinahu wa khuluqahu, his religious commitment and his manners. He's telling this to the guardians. She doesn't like his ears. It is up to her. It is not the first one that will knock on her door and he's religious. She has to take him. Because the Prophet ﷺ said, انظر إليها فإن في أعين الأنصار شيئا. Look at her before you marry her. Because the Ansar have something in their eyes that is different from al-Muhajireen. If you're pleased, that is fine. Muhajirin and Ansar married each other. But before you do this, look at her. If you're pleased, that's fine. So she has the same right, you know, to see, to look at him and say, well, I accept him, I don't accept him. And like I said, Fatima were, you know, did not have any trouble with religious commitment or the manners of Thabit ibn Qais. But she didn't like him. The Prophet ﷺ said to Bani Bayada, أَنْكِحُ أَبَا هِنْدْ وَأَنْكِحُ إِلَيْهِ وَكَانَ حَجَّامًا. So he said to Bani Bayada, give your female relatives in marriage to Abi Hind and marry his daughters. And he was a cupper. A cupper used to be like a very lowly profession. But that is pretty much nowadays is what, you know, we can call this, you know, huh? Surgery or, I don't know. In practice, all of this, the statements, in practice, the Prophet ﷺ married his cousin, Zainab bint Jahsh, to Zayd ibn Haritha, right, who was a freed slave. The Prophet Bilal, who was a freed slave, married the daughter of Abdurrahman ibn Auf, who was a Qurashiyya. Abu Hudhaifa married Hind, his cousin Hind, to his freed slave, Salim. What else? What else is here? Usama. Fatima bint Qais, he told Fatima bint Qais, marry Osama. And Osama is the son of Zayd, who is a freed slave, and Ayman, who is another freed slave. So all of these are examples of what used to happen during the time of the Prophet ﷺ and what he supervised himself. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَالطَّيِّبَاتُ لِلطَّيِّبِينَ وَالطَّيِّبُونَ لِلطَّيِّبَاتِ. Good. Which means that the good women are for good men, and good men are for good women. Al-Bukhari, made a chapter all about, you know, the suitability of all Muslims to one another, compatibility. Ibn al-Qayyim has something to say here. Where is Ibn al-Qayyim's? Anyway, there was a nice statement by Ibn al-Qayyim. Maybe I don't have it here. But to affirm this. So ultimately now, the issue here is we differentiate between rules and rulings and guidelines and so on and individual cases. And we do not say to a father that you have to marry your daughter to the first religious one who knocks on the door. Right? And at the same time, we say, as a rule, that all Muslims are compatible for all Muslims, as a rule. Now, each father will have to examine that marriage on case-by-case scenario. Because that man who comes from a family that is quite, you know, different, could have made up for that gap by being a professor, for instance, he could have excelled. He could have said, so that makes up for that. Then each case will have to be studied separately. But the default is all Muslims are compatible for all Muslims. And that's it.